30 inches, maybe more. They sat down. Kearse started typing.
We searched through all nearby CCTV cameras the night of the murder, looking for two men who fit your description. As you can imagine, it took some time. Anyway, there's a condo building on 74th and 5th Avenue. Take a look.
The CCTV shot the two men from above.
Is that them?
Yes, Maya said. Or do you want me to give the legalese about just matching the build and clothes?
No, this isn't on the record. As you can see, they aren't wearing ski masks. We wouldn't think they would on the street. That would draw attention.
Still, Maya said, I don't see how you got an ID from that angle.
I know. The camera is so damned high, it's so annoying. I can't tell you how many times we get this. The camera is set ridiculously high, and the perps just keep their chins tucked or wear a cap and we can't see their faces. But anyway, once we had this, we knew that they were in the area, so we kept looking.
You spotted them again? Kearse nodded and started typing again.
Yep. At a Duane Reade half an hour later.
He brought up the video. This one was in color. It was shot from the side of the cash register. The two guys' faces were clear now. One was black. The other looked lighter skinned, maybe Latino. They paid in cash.
Cold,
Kearse said. What?
Look at the timestamp. This is 15 minutes after they shot your husband. And here they are, maybe half a mile away, buying Red Bulls and Doritos.
Maya just stared.
Like I said, cold.
She turned to him. Or I got it wrong.
Not likely.
Kearse stopped the video, freezing the two men. Yes, men. They were young men, no question about it, but Maya had served with too many men that age to call them boys.
Take a look at this.
He hit an arrow button on the keyboard. The camera zoomed in, blowing up the picture. Kearse focused in on the Latino.
That's the other guy, right? The one who wasn't the shooter?
Yes.
Notice anything?
Not really. He zoomed in closer now, with the camera focused squarely on the guy's waist.
Look again.
Maya nodded. He's packing.
Right, he's carrying a gun. You can see the handle if you zoom close enough.
Not very subtle, she said.
Nope. Hey, I wonder how all your open carry Patriot buddies would react to these two guys strolling down their street strapped like that.
I doubt it's a legally purchased gun, Maya said.
It's not.
You found the gun?
You know it.
He sighed and stood.
Meet Emilio Rodrigo. Got an impressive rap sheet for a young punk. They both do. Mr. Rodrigo had the Beretta M9 on him when we arrested him. Illegally owned. He'll serve time for it.
He stopped. Maya said, I hear a but.
We got a warrant and searched both of their residences. That's where we found the clothes you described and identified today.
Will that stick in court?
Doubtful. Like our ponytailed pal in there said, they're red cons. Lots of people own them. There was also no sign of ski masks, which I found odd. I mean, they kept the clothes. Why throw out the ski masks?
Don't know.
They probably dumped them in a garbage can. You know, right away. They shoot, they run, they rip off the masks, they dump them somewhere.
That makes sense.
Yeah, except we searched all the nearby garbage cans. Still, they could have found a place, maybe a sewer or something.
Kearse hesitated. What?
Thing is, we located the Beretta, like I said. But we didn't find the murder weapon, the .38.
Maya sat back. I'd be surprised if they kept it, wouldn't you?
I guess, except...
Except what?
Punks like these guys don't always dump the gun. They should, but they don't. It has value, so they reuse it or they sell it to a buddy, whatever.
But this was a pretty big case, right? High profile, lots of media.
True.
Maya watched him. But you don't buy that, do you? You have another theory.
I do.
Kearse looked away.
But it makes no sense.
What doesn't? He started scratching his arm. A nervous tick of some kind.
The .38s we took from your husband's body. We ran them through ballistics, you know, to see if the bullets matched any other cases in our database.
Maya looked up at him. Kearse kept scratching. I'm guessing from your expression, she said, that you found a match.
We did, yeah.
So these guys, they've killed before.
I don't think so.
But you just said,
same gun. Doesn't mean the same guys. In fact, Fred Caton, the one you identified as the shooter, had a stone-cold alibi for the first murder. He was serving time. He couldn't have done it.
When?
When what?
When was the first murder?
4 months ago.
The room chilled. Kearse didn't have to say it. He knew. She knew. Kearse couldn't meet her eye. He looked away, nodded, and said,
the same gun that killed your husband also killed your sister.
Chapter 8.
Are you okay?
Kearse asked. Fine.
I know this is a lot to take in.
Don't patronize me, detective.
I'm sorry, you're right. Let's go through this again, okay?
Maya nodded. She stared straight ahead.
We need to look at this in a whole new way now. The two murders seemed random and unconnected, but now that we know the same gun was used for both.
Maya said nothing.
When your sister was shot, you were deployed in the Middle East, is that correct?
At Camp Arifjan, she said, in Kuwait.
I know.
What?
We checked, just to make sure.
Make sure? She almost smiled. You mean like to make sure I didn't somehow sneak home and shoot my sister and then go back to Kuwait and what, wait 4 months and kill my husband? Kearse didn't reply. He didn't have to.
It all checked out. Your alibi is rock solid.
Super, she said. Maya flashed back again to Joe's call. The tears. The shock. That call, that damn call had been the end of Maya's life as she knew it. Nothing would ever be the same after that. It was remarkable when you thought about it. You travel halfway around the world to some hellhole to fight a crazed enemy. You'd think that was where the danger would originate from, that the real threat to her would be from an armed combatant. You'd think if your life were about to get blown apart that it would come from an RPG or an IED or a fanatic carrying an AKM. But no. The enemy had struck, as enemies often do, where she had least expected it. Back home in the good old USA.
Maya?
I'm listening.
The officers investigating your sister's murder believed it was a home invasion. She was... Do you know the details?
Enough of them.
I'm sorry.
I asked you not to patronize me.
I'm not. I'm just being a human being. What was done to her?
Maya took out her app again. She wanted to see her daughter's face. She needed that anchor. But she stopped herself.
No, not now.
Don't bring Lily into this. Not even in the most innocuous way.
At the time of the murder, the cops also took a good look at Claire's husband, your brother-in-law.
He started searching through his papers. Eddie.
Right, Edward Walker.
He wouldn't do it. He loved her.
Well, they cleared him,
Kearse said.
But now we need to take a closer look at the home life. We need to take a fresh look at everything.
Maya saw it now. She smiled, but there was no humor or warmth. How long, detective? He kept his head down.
Excuse me?
How long have you known about the ballistic report? Kearse kept reading the file. You've known about it for a while, haven't you? About the same gun killing Joe and Claire?
What makes you say that?
When you came to my house to check out my Smith & Wesson, I assume it was to make sure that it wasn't the murder weapon, to make sure it didn't match either murder.
That doesn't mean anything.
No, but you said you no longer suspected me. Remember? He said nothing. That's because you already knew I had the perfect alibi. You knew that the same gun had been used to kill my sister. And you knew that I was overseas when Claire was shot. Before then, well, you hadn't found the two guys with the ski masks. I could have made that up. But once you had that ballistics report, you only had to double-check my whereabouts with the military. You did that. I know the procedure. That's not one phone call. So how long have you had the ballistic report? His voice was low.
Since the funeral?
Right. And when did you find Emilio Rodrigo and Fred Caton and get confirmation I was in Kuwait?
Late last night.
Maya nodded, just as she had thought.
Come on, Maya, don't be naive. Like I said, we looked hard at your brother-in-law when your sister was murdered. Here's one time when there's no sexism. Think about it. You're the spouse, you're alone in a park. If you were me, who would be your number one suspect?
Especially, Maya added, when that spouse served in the military and is, in your eyes, a gun nut. He didn't bother defending himself. Then again, he didn't have to. He was right. You always suspect the spouse. So now that we got all that out of the way, Maya said, what do we do now?
We look for connections, Keir said, between your sister and your husband.
The biggest being me.
Yes, but there are more.
Maya nodded. They work together.
Exactly. Joe hired your sister for his equities firm. Why?
Because Claire was smart. Just saying her name stung. Because Joe knew that she was hardworking and reliable and trustworthy.
And because Claire was family?
Maya considered this. Yes, but not in a nepotistic way.
What way, then?
The Burkettes are big on family. It's old-world clan-like.
They don't trust outsiders?
They don't want to trust outsiders.
Okay, I get that,
Keir said.
But if I had to work every day with my sister-in-law? Ugh. Shudder. You know what I mean?
I do.
Of course, my sister-in-law's a world-class, Olympic-sized pain in the ass. I'm sure your sister...
He caught himself now, cleared his throat.
So they're working together, Joe and Claire. Did it cause any tension?
I worried about that, Maya said. My uncle, he had a business, very successful, but then other family members wanted in and he let them and it all went to hell. Family and money is never a good mix. Someone is always going to feel resentful.
But that didn't happen here?
Just the opposite. Claire and Joe had this fun new connection, work. They'd talk business all the time. She would call with ideas, he would remember something that needed to be done the next day and text it to her. She shrugged. But then again...
Then again?
Maya looked up at him. I wasn't around a whole lot.
You were deployed overseas.
Right.
Still, Keir said, none of it adds up. What would make someone kill Claire, hold on to the gun for 4 months, and then give it to this Caton guy to kill Joe?
Yo, Kears.
It was another cop in the station. The younger man stood across the room and beckoned for Kears to come toward him.
Excuse me a moment.
Kears headed over to the cop. The young cop leaned in and the two men started whispering. Maya watched. Her head was still spinning, but her thoughts kept returning to something that didn't seem to concern Kears in the least. The nanny cam video. That was natural, she supposed. He hadn't seen the actual images. He was preoccupied with the facts, and while he didn't completely dismiss what she said as the ravings of a delusional nutbag, he probably figured that it was the work of an overactive imagination or something in that realm. To be fair, even Maya had to consider that possibility. Kears finished up the conversation and came toward her. What's wrong? He grabbed his suit coat and threw it over his shoulder like Sinatra playing the Sands.
I'll drive you home,
he said.
We can finish this conversation on the way.
10 minutes into the ride, Kears said,
So you saw me talking to that cop before we left, right?
Yes.
That was about your, situation.
He kept his eyes on the road.
I mean what you said about the nanny cam and the pepper spray and all that.
So he hadn't forgotten. What about it?
Well, look, I'm going to ignore for now what you said about the contents, okay? Until I see and we can both analyze the video, there's no reason to discredit or, confirm what may be on that... What was it again, a USB drive?
An SD card.
Right, the SD card. There is no reason yet to deal with intangibles. But that doesn't mean there is nothing we can do.
I'm not following.
You were assaulted. That's a fact. Check that. You were clearly hit with pepper spray or some agent in that family. Your eyes are still red. I can see that you are still dealing with the residual after effects. So whatever else we want to believe, clearly something happened to you.
He made a turn, sneaking a glance at her as he did.
You said that it was your nanny, Isabella, who assaulted you, right?
Right.
So I sent a man out to her house. You know, to check out your claim.
Her claim. Nice lingo. So did your man find her? Kearse kept his eyes fixed on the road.
Let me ask you a question first.
She didn't like that reply. Okay.
During this altercation, he began, speaking with more care now, did you threaten or choke Isabella Mendez?
Is that what she told you?
It's a simple question.
No, I did not.
You didn't touch her?
I may have touched, but—
May have?
Come on, detective. I may have touched her to get her attention. The way two women might.
Two women.
He almost smiled.
So now you're playing the woman card with me?
I didn't hurt her or anything.
Did you grab her?
Maya saw where this was going. So your man found her?
He did.
And she what, claimed that she pepper sprayed me in self-defense?
Something like that. She said that you were acting irrationally.
In what way?
She said you were ranting about seeing Joe on a video.
Maya tried to think how to play this. What else did she say?
She said that you scared her. She said that you grabbed her by the shirt near the throat in a threatening manner.
I see.
Is she telling the truth?
Did she mention that I played the video for her?
Yes.
And?
She said the screen was blank.
Wow. Maya said.
She said that she worried you were delusional. She said that you served in the military and that you often carry a gun. She said when you add all that up, your background, your ranting, your delusions, your assault of her first.
Assault?
By your own admission, Maya, you touched her.
She frowned but kept still.
Isabella said that she felt threatened, so she used the pepper spray and ran.
Did your man ask about the missing SD card?
He did.
Let me guess. She didn't take it and knows nothing about it.
Bingo,
Kearse said. He hit the turn signal.
Do you still want to press charges?
But Maya could see how this would play out. A gun nut with a controversial past in the military screams about her murdered husband playing with their daughter on a video, grabs the nanny by the lapels, and then accuses the nanny of what, unjustified use of pepper spray?
Oh, and stealing the video of her dead husband.
Yeah, that'll play. Not now, Maya said. Kearse dropped her off at the house. He promised to stay in touch about any new developments. Maya thanked him. She debated picking up Lily at daycare, but after one quick look at her new phone app, it was story time, and even from the odd angle of the camera, Maya could see that Lily was riveted. She decided that it could wait. Dozens of messages and texts were on her phone, all from Joe's family. Oh, damn, she had missed the reading of the will. She didn't much care for her own sake, but Joe's family must have been livid. She picked up the phone and called Joe's mother. Judith picked up the phone on the first ring.
Maya?
I'm sorry about today.
Are you okay?
I'm fine, Maya said.
And Lily?
Fine, too. Something came up. I didn't mean to worry you.
Something came up more important than
the police found the shooters, Maya interrupted. They needed me to identify them. Maya heard Judith gasp.
Were you able to?
Yes.
So they're in jail? It's over?
It's more complicated than that, Maya said. Right now they don't have enough to hold them.
I don't understand.
They wore ski masks, so I never saw their faces. Build and clothing isn't enough.
So they just let them go? The two men who killed my son are free to walk the streets?
They have one on a weapons charge. Like I said, it's complicated.
Maybe we can talk about it when you come by tomorrow morning. Heather Howell felt it best if we wait until all parties are present before we read the will.
Heather Howell was the family attorney. Maya said her goodbyes, hung up, and stared at her kitchen. Everything was sleek and new, and God, she missed that old Formica kitchen table in Brooklyn. What the hell was she doing in this house? She had never belonged here. She walked over to the nanny cam picture frame. Maybe the SD card was still inside it. Maya couldn't imagine how that would happen, but she was pretty much open to any interpretation. Had she really seen Joe on that video cam? No. Could he somehow still be alive? No. Had she imagined the whole thing? No. Her dad had been a big fan of detective fiction. He used to read Sir Arthur Conan Doyle to Maya and Claire at that Formica kitchen table. How had Sherlock Holmes put it? When you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. Maya picked up the picture frame and looked in the back. No SD card. When you have eliminated the impossible. The SD card was gone. Ergo, Isabella had taken it. Ergo, Isabella had lied. Isabella had used the pepper spray to incapacitate Maya so she could take the SD card. Isabella was part of this. Part of what? One thing at a time. Maya started to put the frame back on the shelf when something made her stop. She stared at the frame, the digital pictures Eileen had preloaded shuffling by, when the thought hit her anew. Why had Eileen given her the nanny cam frame in the first place? Eileen had told her, hadn't she? Maya was alone now. She was leaving Lily with a nanny. Having a nanny cam made sense. Better to be cautious than sorry. That all added up, didn't it? Maya kept staring at the frame. When she peered hard, she could see the pinhole camera built into the top of the black frame. Odd when you think about it. Sure, the nanny cam was an extra piece of security, but when you let a camera into your house, were you letting someone else inside too? Couldn't someone somehow watch you? Okay, slow down, let's not get paranoid here. But now that Maya thought about it, someone had engineered these cameras. Most of these gizmos could be hooked up to direct feeds and watched live in some way. It didn't mean they were, but the potential was there. The manufacturers could have a secret back door in and watch your every move, in the same way Maya could flip on her app and take a look at Lily at the daycare center. Holy crap. Why had she let such a thing into her house? Eileen's voice came back to her.
So do you trust her?
And then,
you trust no one, Maya.
But she did. She trusted Shane. She had trusted Claire. And Eileen? She had met Eileen through Claire. Maya was still a senior in high school when Claire, a year older, started college at Vassar. She had driven Claire up to school and helped her unpack. Eileen had been assigned as Claire's roommate. Maya remembered how cool she thought Eileen was. She was cute and funny and swore like a sailor. She was loud and bouncy and ferocious. When Claire brought her home to Brooklyn during college breaks, Eileen would debate with Dad for hours, giving better than she took. Maya had thought she was a balls-to-the-wall hard-ass. But life changes people. It smothers that kind of larger-than-life woman. Time quiets them down. That firecracker girl you knew in high school, where is she now? It didn't happen to men as much. Those boys often grew up to be masters of the universe. The super successful girls? They seemed to die of slow societal suffocation. So why had Eileen given Maya the nanny cam? No point in wondering. Time to confront and figure out what the hell was going on here. Maya headed into the basement. She opened the safe with her index finger. The Beretta M9 was right there, but she took the Glock 26 instead. Smaller. Easier to hide. She didn't think that she'd need a weapon, but no one ever thinks they do. Chapter 9. Eileen was in the front yard working on her roses when Maya pulled up. Eileen waved. Maya returned it and put the car in park. Maya had never had a lot of female friends. Maya and Claire had grown up on the bottom two floors of a townhouse in the Greenpoint section of Brooklyn. Her father had been a college professor at NYU. Her mother worked 6 years as a legal defense attorney, but ended up quitting to raise her two children. Her parents weren't pacifists or socialists or anything like that, but they certainly leaned toward the left. They sent their daughters to summer camp at Brandeis University. They made them learn wind instruments and read the classics. They gave their girls formal religious training, but stressed their own belief that these were allegories and myths, not facts. They owned no handguns. They didn't hunt or fish or do anything that hinted at outdoorsy. Maya had been drawn to the idea of flying airplanes at a young age. No one knew how or why. No one in the family flew or had any interest in anything involving flight or mechanics or really anything in the general vicinity. Her parents had assumed that Maya's obsession was a phase. It wasn't. Her parents neither condemned nor condoned her decision to apply for the Army's elite pilot program. They just didn't seem to get it. During basic training, she had been given a Beretta M9, and as much as people looked for all kinds of complicated psychological reasons why, Maya simply liked firing the gun. Yes, she got that weapons could kill and understood the destructive nature and could see how many people, mostly men, use them as a dangerous and stupid compensation for their own inadequacies. She got that some people liked guns because of the way the guns made them feel, that some kind of unhealthy transference was going on, and that often it was a very bad thing. But in her case, Maya simply liked shooting. She was also good at it and drawn to it. Why? Who the hell knows? The same reason people are drawn to basketball or swimming or collecting antiques or skydiving, she guessed. Eileen stood up and brushed the dirt off her knees. She smiled and started toward Maya. Maya got out of the car.
Hey, you, Eileen said.
Why did you give me that nanny cam? Just like that. Eileen stopped mid-stride.
Why? What happened?
Maya looked for that feisty freshman. There were signs of her every once in a while. She was recovering, but time passes and wounds don't fully heal. Eileen had been so smart and tough and resourceful, or so it appeared. And then she met the wrong man. Simple as that. Robbie had been so doting at first. He would flatter Eileen and brag about her. He was proud of her, telling everyone how smart Eileen was. Then he became too proud of her, the kind of proud that plays on that line between love and obsession. Claire was concerned, but it was Maya who noticed the bruises first. Eileen had started wearing long sleeves. But neither sister did anything at first because they simply couldn't believe it. Maya had figured that victims of domestic abuse were more victim-y? Weak women get into these situations. Lost or poor or uneducated women. Women with no backbone. Those are the ones men abuse. Strong women like Eileen? No way. Just answer the question, Maya said. Why did you give me that nanny cam?
Why do you think? Eileen countered. You're a widow with a little girl.
For protection.
You really don't see that?
Where did you buy it?
What?
The digital frame with the hidden camera. Where did you buy it?
Online?
What store?
You're kidding, right?
Maya just stared at her.
Sheesh, okay, I bought it on Amazon. What's going on, Maya?
Show me.
Are you serious?
If you bought it online, there will be a record of it under past orders. Show me.
I don't understand any of this. What happened?
Maya had so admired Eileen. Her sister could be a bit of a goody-goody. Eileen was wilder. Eileen made her feel good. Eileen got her. But that was a long time ago.
Eileen angrily pulled off her gardening gloves and threw them on the ground. Fine.
She started for the door. Maya followed behind her. When she caught up, Maya could see Eileen's face was set.
Eileen, you were right before.
About? Tears brimmed in her eyes.
Robbie. That's how I got rid of him for good.
I don't understand. The house was a split level built in the 1960s. They stood in the den. One wall was covered with photographs of Kyle and Missy. No pictures of Eileen. No pictures of Robbie. But it was the poster on the other wall that drew Maya's eye. Claire had the same one in her den. Using four black and white photographs running left to right, the framed print showed the construction stages of the Eiffel Tower. Eileen and Claire had bought them on a backpacking trip the three of them, Eileen, Maya, Claire, took to France during the summer when Eileen and Claire were 20 and Maya was 19. For the first week of their journey, the girls would meet up with different French men every night. They'd make out with them, no more, and giggle the whole night about how cute Francois or Laurent or Pascal was. A week in, Claire met Jean-Pierre and started the perfect summer romance. Intense, passionate, romantic, full of PDA, public displays of affection that made Maya and Eileen gag, and sadly, forced to die in 6 weeks' time. For a fleeting moment at the end of their stay, Claire actually toyed with the idea of not returning to Vassar for her senior year. She was in love. Jean-Pierre was in love. He begged her to stay. He was a realistic romantic, he claimed, and so he knew the odds, but he also knew that they could beat them. He loved her.
Please, Claire, I know we can do it.
Claire was simply too practical. She broke his heart and her own. She came home, cried, and then got on with her regularly scheduled life. Where, Maya wondered, was Jean-Pierre now? Was he married or happy? Did he have kids? Did he still think about Claire? Did he know via the web or whatever that she was dead? How had he reacted to her death? Shock, anger, denial? Devastation? Sad shrug? Maya wondered what would have happened if Claire had decided to stay with Jean-Pierre in France. In all likelihood, she would have had a few more weeks, maybe months, of romance before coming back home. She'd have missed a semester at Vassar, maybe, and graduated late. Big friggin' deal. Claire should have stayed. She shouldn't have been so damn practical.
I know you thought that you got rid of Robbie for good, Eileen said. And I thank you for that. You saved my life, you know that.
The midnight text Eileen had sent Maya was simple.
He's going to kill me. Please help.
Maya had driven over with this same weapon in her purse. Robbie was drunk and raging, calling Eileen a dirty whore and worse. He'd been spying on Eileen and saw her smile at some guy at the gym. He was throwing things when Maya arrived, searching for his wife, who had found a hiding spot in the basement.
You scared him that night.
Maya had, perhaps taking it a step too far, but sometimes it was the only way.
But when he found out you'd redeployed, he started coming around again.
Why didn't you call the police? Eileen just shrugged.
They never believe me. They say the right things, but you know Robbie. He can be charming.
And, Maya added to herself, Eileen never pressed charges. The vicious cycle of abuse fueled by a mixture of false optimism and fear. So what happened?
He came back and beat me. Broke two ribs.
Maya closed her eyes.
Eileen. I couldn't live with the fear anymore. I thought about getting a gun. You know, it would be self-defense, right?
Maya said nothing.
Except then what? The cops would wonder why I suddenly decided to buy a gun. I'd probably still get charged. And even if I didn't, what kind of life is that for Kyle and Missy? Their mom killed their dad. You think they'd ever understand it?
Yes,
Maya thought, but she kept it to herself.
I couldn't live with the fear, so I set it up to take one more beating. That's all. If I could live through it, maybe I'd be rid of him for good.
Maya saw where this was going. You taped him with the hidden camera. She nodded.
I brought the tape to my lawyer. He wanted to take it to the cops, but I just wanted it over. So he talked to Robbie's lawyer. Robbie dropped his request for joint custody. He knows the tape is with my lawyer, and if he comes back, it isn't perfect, but it's better now.
Why didn't you tell me?
Because there was nothing you could do. Because you've always been everyone's protector. I didn't want that for you anymore. I wanted you to be okay, too.
I'm fine.
No, Maya, you're not.
Eileen bent over the computer.
Do you know how some people want cops to wear cameras all the time? 92% of the public. I mean, why not? But I wonder if we all shouldn't wear them all the time. How would we behave? Would we be better to each other? So I started thinking about that. I thought we should record whatever we could. That's why I bought the hidden cameras. Do you get that?
Show me the order, please.
Fine.
Eileen didn't protest anymore.
Here.
Maya looked down at the screen. There it was. An order for 3 digital camera frames with hidden cameras. This order is a month old.
I ordered 3 for myself. I gave you one of mine.
A month ago. So the idea that Eileen was in on all this, whatever the hell this was, seemed very unlikely. No one could have foreseen all of this a month ago. And really, what the hell did Maya think Eileen could have done here?
None of it made any sense. Maya?
She turned to Eileen.
I'm going to skip the part where I'm insulted that you didn't trust me.
I saw something.
Yeah, I figured that out. What?
Maya wasn't in the mood to share that lunacy with Eileen. Eileen might believe, she might not, but either way it would take time to explain, and Maya saw no outcome where Eileen could help her down that particular avenue. The police learned something strange about Claire's murder.
A lead?
Maybe.
After all this time?
Eileen shook her head.
Wow.
Tell me what you remember about it.
About Claire's murder?
Yes. Eileen shrugged.
It was a home invasion? Drifters, the police thought, that's all I know.
It wasn't a home invasion. It wasn't drifters.
What then?
The same gun that killed Claire, Maya said, killed Joe. Eileen's eyes widened.
But that can't be.
It can.
And you learned this on the nanny cam?
What? No. The police ran a ballistic test on the bullets they pulled out of Joe's body. They ran the results through a computer to see if the bullet matched any other cases in the system.
And it was a match for Claire?
Eileen collapsed back.
My God.
This is where I need your help, Eileen. Eileen looked up at her as though through a haze.
Anything?
I need you to think back.
Okay.
Was Claire acting any different before her murder? Was anything odd going on? Anything at all?
I always thought it was a random thing.
Eileen was still stunned.
A home invasion.
It wasn't. We know that now. I need you to focus, Eileen, okay? Claire is dead. Joe is dead. The same weapon was used to murder both of them. Maybe they were both mixed up in something.
Mixed up in something? Claire?
Nothing bad. But something was going on, something that connected the two of them. Think, Eileen, you knew Claire better than anyone. Eileen lowered her head. Eileen?
I didn't think it had anything to do with it.
Maya felt that jolt. She tried to stay very still. Tell me.
Claire was acting, not weirdly or anything, but there was one thing.
Maya nodded, trying to encourage her to say more.
We were having lunch at Baumgart's one day. This was a week, maybe 2, before the murder. Her cell phone rang. She turned all white. Now, normally she answers the phone in front of me. We don't really have secrets, you know that.
Go on.
But this time, Claire grabbed the phone and hurried outside. I looked out the window and I could see she was all animated. She was on for maybe 5 minutes, then she came back.
Did she tell you who was on the phone?
No.
Did you ask?
Yes. She said it was nothing.
I hear a but.
But it clearly wasn't nothing.
Eileen shook her head.
How could I not make her tell me? How could I just... Anyway, she was distracted the rest of lunch. I tried to raise it a few more times, but she just shut me down. Jesus, I should have done more.
I don't know what more you could have done. Maya thought about it. The police would have gone through her phone records anyway. They would have looked into all her calls.
That's just it.
What?
The phone.
What about it?
It wasn't hers.
Maya leaned forward. Come again?
Her normal phone, the one with the case with the kid's picture on it, was still on the table,
Eileen said.
Claire was carrying a second phone.
Chapter 10. The Burkett servants lived in a complex of small homes on the back edge of the Farnwood estate, just left of the delivery entrance. The homes were all one level and reminded Maya of army barracks. The largest belonged to the Mendezes, Isabella's family. Isabella's mother, Rosa, still worked in the main house, though it was hard to say what she did now that all the children were grown. Maya knocked on Isabella's door. There was no sign of life, but these were hardworking people. Their hours were insane. Maya was far from a socialist, but she found it ironic how much the Burkettes complained about staff and workers, really believing that this country was a meritocracy, when everything had been handed to them because two generations earlier, a grandfather had found a way to exploit real estate laws. She knew most of the Burkettes wouldn't last a week working their servants' hours. Hector's Dodge Ram pickup pulled in behind her. He parked a good distance from her and stepped out.
Mrs. Burkett?
He looked scared.
Where's Isabella?
I think you better leave.
Maya shook her head. Not until I talk to Isabella.
She isn't here.
Where is she?
She went away.
Away where? Hector shook his head. I just want to apologize, Maya said. It was all a misunderstanding.
I'll tell her you said that.
He shuffled his weight from one foot to the other.
I think you better leave now.
Where is she, Hector?
I'm not going to tell you. You really scared her.
I need to talk to her. You can stay in the room, make sure she's safe or whatever.
A voice from behind her said,
That's not going to happen.
Maya turned and saw Isabella's mother standing there. She gave Maya a withering glare and said,
Leave.
No. Her eyes flicked toward her son.
Come inside, Hector.
Giving wide berth, Hector made his way through the door. With one more glare, Isabella's mother closed it behind both of them, leaving Maya outside. She should have been prepared for this. Back off, Maya told herself. Think it through. Her cell phone sounded. She checked and saw that the call was from Shane. Hey, she said.
I looked up that license plate for you,
Shane said without preamble.
Your Buick Verano is leased by a company called WTC Limited.
WTC? Didn't ring a bell. Any idea what that stands for?
None. The address is a post office box in Houston, Texas. It looks like some kind of holding company.
The kind of thing someone uses when they want to stay anonymous?
Yep. If we want to learn more, I'll need to get a warrant. And to get that, I'd need a reason for looking into this.
Just forget it, she said.
If you say so.
It's no big deal.
Don't lie to me, Maya. I hate that.
She didn't reply.
When you're ready to come clean, call me.
Shane hung up. Eddie hadn't changed the locks. Maya hadn't been back to Claire's house. Yep, still thinking of it as such, since pulling down Coach Phil's pants. There were no cars in the driveway. Nobody answered her knock.
so she took out the key and let herself in. As she entered the foyer, Eddie's words floated back down to her.
Death follows you, Maya.
Maybe Eddie was right. If that was the case, was it fair to put Daniel and Alexa at risk? Or for that matter, Lily? The boxes with Claire's stuff still hadn't been moved. Maya thought about the mysterious spare phone Eileen had seen. It seemed obvious that the phone was the kind of thing you bought when you didn't want anyone to know who you were calling. So what had happened to that phone? If it had been on Claire when she died, the police would have gone through it. Of course, that could very well have happened. They might have recovered it during their investigation and concluded that it was meaningless. But Maya didn't think so. Shane had contacts with the police. He'd looked into the investigation for her. There was nothing there about a spare phone or any unexplained calls, which meant the phone had probably not yet been discovered. The boxes were unlabeled. Eddie seemed to have done it in a rush, dumping things in a flurry of grief so that clothes were mixed with toiletries, jewelry with papers, shoes with various trinkets. Claire loved cheesy souvenirs. Antiques and true collectibles were deemed too expensive, but Claire always got the snow globe when she visited a new city or tourist attraction. She had a shot glass from Tijuana. She bought a little piggy bank shaped like the Leaning Tower of Pisa. She owned a Princess Di memorial plate, a wiggly Hawaiian hula girl who shook her stuff on a car dashboard, a pair of used Vegas casino dice. Maya remained stone-faced as she sorted through the goofy tchotchkes that had at one point in their existence made Claire smile. She was in mission mode now. On one level, doing this, sorting through these nothings that her sister had cherished, was intensely painful, and the guilt started seeping in. Your husband is right. I let death in. I should have been here. I should have protected you. But on another level, a higher, more important level, this guilt and pain helped. They made her mission more discernible. When you can see the stakes, when you realize the true purpose of your mission, it motivates you. It makes you focus. It makes you push away the distractions. You gain clarity of purpose. You gain strength. But there was no phone in any of the boxes. After the last box, she collapsed back onto the floor. Think it through, she told herself. Get into Claire's head. Her sister had owned a phone she wanted no one to know about. Where would she hide it? A memory came to Maya. Claire had been a junior in high school, Maya a sophomore. Claire, in perhaps her one fit of rebellion, had started smoking cigarettes. Dad had a super sensitive nose. He could smell them on her. Dad was pretty liberal about most things. Being a college professor, he had seen it all and expected experimentation. But cigarettes struck a nerve. His own mother had died a horrible death from lung cancer. Nana had moved into the small spare room toward the end. Maya remembered the sounds, mostly, the haunting, horrible, wet, sucking gurgling coming from Nana's room, spending her last few days slowly and agonizingly being choked to death. Maya could barely enter that room after Nana's death. Death lingered. Its smell had seemingly burrowed into the walls. Worse than that, Maya sometimes was sure that she could still hear the sucking, gurgling sound. She had read somewhere that that sound never fully disappears. It just gets fainter and fainter. Like the sounds of helicopter rotors. Like the sound of gunfire. Like the screams of death. Maybe, Maya thought now, in that terrible room, maybe that was where death first started to follow her. Maya stayed on the floor and closed her eyes. She tried to slow down her breathing and keep the sounds at a distance. The memory nudged her again. Dad hated cigarettes. Right, okay. Claire started smoking and Dad would freak out. He started searching Claire's bedroom at night, finding the cigarettes and throwing small tantrums. The smoking stage didn't last long. But while it did, Claire finally thought of a hiding place their father would never look. Maya's eyes lit up. She quickly stood and hurried toward the living room. The old trunk, ironically Nana's old trunk, was there. Claire had used it as a coffee table. There were family photos on top. Maya started taking them off and putting them on the floor. Most of the photos were of Daniel and Alexa, but there was one of Eddie and Claire from the wedding. Maya stopped and stared at them. Both looked so damned young and hopeful and happy and mostly unsuspecting. These two had no idea what life had in store for them, but then again, no one does, do they? The inside of the trunk was used to store tablecloths and linens. Maya removed them and started feeling her way along the bottom.
My father brought the trunk over from Kiev, Nana had told them during a visit when they were little, years before the cancer choked her to death, when Nana was spry and healthy, when she would take them swimming or teach them tennis. See this? The two little girls bent close. He built it himself. It's a secret compartment.
Why was it a secret, Nana?
Claire had asked.
So he could hide his mother's jewelry and cash. Every stranger is a potential thief, remember that. You two girls, when you're older, you will always have each other. But never leave your valuables where others can find them.
Maya's finger found the small seam. She dug down, heard the click, and slid back the secret panel. Then, just as she had done as a child, she bent close and looked inside. The phone was there. Maya pulled it out with a smile of satisfaction on her face. If she were a more religious person, she would have sworn that her sister and her Nana were looking down upon her. But she wasn't religious. The dead always stayed dead. That was the problem. She tried to flip the phone on, but the battery was completely empty. No surprise. It had probably been sitting untouched since Claire's murder. Maya turned the phone over and checked the charging socket. It looked somewhat familiar. She'd be able to find a cord and charge it later.
What are you doing here?
The voice startled her. Instinctively, she rolled away from it and came up prepared to defend herself.
For Christ's sake, Eddie.
Eddie's face was red.
I said,
I heard you. Give me a second to catch my breath. So much for clarity and focus, Maya thought. She had been so lost in the brilliance of her discovery that Eddie had been able to enter and sneak up on her without her noticing. Another mistake.
I asked you what you-
I was going through her boxes, Maya said. Eddie took a step that had a little too much sway in it.
I told you to stay away.
So you did. Eddie wore the same red flannel shirt with the sleeves rolled up to reveal his ropey forearm muscles. He was wiry and tight like a welterweight boxer. Claire had liked that about him, his build. His eyes had the red of drink. He stuck out his hand, palm up.
I want your key, now.
I don't think so, Eddie.
I can change the locks.
You can barely change your clothes. He looked down at the picture frames and linens strewn on the floor.
What are you doing in that trunk?
Maya didn't reply.
I saw you take something. Give it back.
No. He eyed her now, his hands forming fists.
I can just take it.
No, you can't. Was she having an affair, Eddie? That stopped him. His mouth dropped open. Then he said,
Go to hell.
Did you know about it? The welling in Eddie's eyes started up again, and for a moment, Maya's eyes found that wedding picture, found Eddie's happy, hopeful face. So maybe it wasn't just the drink that was causing the red. Eddie saw it too, the same photograph, and something in him gave. He collapsed onto the couch. His face fell into his hands. Eddie? His voice was barely audible.
Who was it?
I don't know. Eileen said Claire was getting secret calls. I just found a phone she hid in this trunk. He kept his face in his hands.
I don't believe it,
he said in a voice that had nothing behind it. What happened, Eddie?
Nothing.
He looked up.
I mean, we weren't at our best.
But that's marriage. There are cycles. You know all about that, right?
We aren't talking about me. Eddie shook his head and lowered it again.
Maybe. Maybe not.
What's that supposed to mean?
Claire worked, he said too slowly. For your husband.
Maya didn't like the cadence in his voice.
So? So her excuse when I asked was that she was working late.
He met her eyes now. She met his. Maya was not one for talking in circles. If you're trying to imply that Claire and Joe... It was too preposterous to even finish.
You're the one saying she had an affair,
Eddie said, shrugging his way back to his feet.
I'm just telling you where she was.
So you had some inkling that maybe there was someone else?
I didn't say that.
Yeah, you did. How come you never told the cops about that inkling? Now it was his turn not to reply.
Oh, right, Maya said. You're the husband. They were already looking at you hard. Imagine if they knew that you suspected her of having an affair.
Maya?
She waited. He took a step toward her. She took a step backward.
Give me that goddamn phone, he said, and get out of my house.
I'm taking the phone. Eddie stood in her path.
You really want to test me?
Maya thought about the gun in her purse. The truth is, you never forget it. If you carry a weapon, it is always in your thoughts, always weighing you down or pulling at your sleeve. It is always, for better or worse, an option. Eddie took a step toward her. There was no way Maya was giving up the phone. Her hand started toward her purse when she heard two more familiar voices.
Aunt Maya!
Yay!
Daniel and Alexa crashed through the door as only the young can. They gave their aunt a big hug. She hugged them back, making sure neither pressed up against her purse. She kissed them both a little hard, quickly made her excuses, and slipped out the door before Eddie could do anything stupid. 5 minutes later, Eddie called on her mobile.
Sorry about that, he said. I loved Claire. God, how I... You know all this. And we had troubles, sure, but she loved me too.
Maya was driving the car. I know, Eddie.
Do me a favor, Maya.
What?
Whatever you find on that phone, no matter how bad, I need you to tell me. I need to know the truth.
In the rear window, Maya spotted the red Buick again.
Promise me, Maya.
I promise. She hung up and took another look in the rearview mirror, but the red Buick was gone. 20 minutes later, when she got to the Growing Up Daycare Center, Miss Kitty had her fill out the rest of the paperwork and arrange payment. Lily didn't want to leave, which Maya took as a good sign. Back at the house, Maya got Lily settled and opened what she referred to as the drawer of many cords. Like most people she knew, Maya never threw out a power cord. The drawer was stuffed past capacity, like a snake in a can, with dozens, maybe hundreds. Heck, there was probably a cord that could work a Betamax for her to go through. She found an adapter that fit into the bottom of Claire's phone, plugged it in, and waited for it to have enough juice to work. It took about 10 minutes. The phone was rudimentary, just the facts, ma'am, but it did indeed have a call history. She pressed the icon and started to scroll through the calls. They were all to the same number. Maya scrolled down and counted 16 calls. The number was unfamiliar. The area code was 201. That meant northern New Jersey. Who the hell was Claire calling? She checked the dates. The calls started 3 months before her death. The last call came in 4 days before the murder. So what did that mean? The calling pattern was fairly uneven. There were a lot in the beginning, a lot toward the end, a scattering in the middle. Was Claire setting up rendezvous? For a moment, Maya flashed back to Jean-Pierre. Her imagination started toying with her then. Suppose Jean-Pierre had gotten in touch with Claire after all these years. You hear about that all the time, especially in the internet age. No lover ever completely vanishes when you have Facebook. But no, it wasn't Jean-Pierre. Claire would have told her. Really? Was she so sure about that? Claire had been up to something, no question about it, and she hadn't seen fit to tell Maya what it was about. Maya had always thought that she and Claire shared everything, that they had no secrets from each other, but then again, let's be fair here. Maya was on the other side of the world when all this happened, fighting for her country in a forsaken desert instead of being here, home, protecting her sister. You were keeping secrets, Claire. So now what? Do the easiest thing first. Google the phone number. See if she got lucky and something came up. Maya typed the numbers into the search engine and hit the return button. Bingo. Sort of. The number came up right away, which surprised her. Most times when you Google a number, you get some offer to buy information or background checks on its owner from a third party. The phone number Claire had been calling was a business of sorts, but like everything else surrounding the swirling insanity of the past few weeks, it led to more questions than answers. The place was indeed in northern New Jersey, near, if the Google map was to be believed, the George Washington Bridge. It was called Leather and Lace, a gentleman's club. Gentleman's club. Euphemism for a strip club. Maya clicked on the link, just to be sure, and was greeted with a screen full of scantily clad women. Yep. Strip club. Her sister had secured a secret phone and hidden it in their grandmother's old trunk so she could call a strip club. Did that make sense? Nope. Maya tried to throw this new information into the mix. When she added it all up, Claire, Joe, the nanny cam, the phone, the strip club, the rest, Maya considered all the possibilities and came up with Bupkis. Nothing made sense. She started grasping at straws. Maybe Claire was having an affair and, what, her boyfriend worked there. Maybe Jean-Pierre was the club manager. The website did offer its upscale clientele something called a French lapper, though Maya had no idea and did not want to know what that could possibly be. Maybe Claire was leading a secret life and worked there. You read about that sometimes or see it in a bad cable movie. Housewife by day, stripper by night. Stop. She picked up the phone and called Eddie.
You found something? He said.
Look, Eddie, if I have to dance around, she realized the irony the moment the words spilled from her lips, or worry about filling you in, I'm not going to learn anything, okay?
Yeah, sorry. What's up?
Do you ever go to strip clubs? Silence. Then.
Ever?
Yeah.
Last year, some guys at work had a bachelor party at one.
And since then?
That's it.
Where was the club?
Wait, what is this?
Just answer, Eddie.
Outside of Philadelphia? Cherry Hill area?
No others?
That's it.
Does a club called Leather and Lace mean anything to you?
You're kidding, right?
Eddie?
No. It means nothing to me.
Okay, thanks.
You're not going to tell me what this is about?
Not yet. Bye. Maya sat there and stared at the website. Why would Claire be calling Leather and Lace? No reason to keep coming up with unfounded theories. She wanted to drive right now and go to the club, but she had no sitter for Lily. Growing up, closed at 8 p.m. Tomorrow, she thought. Tomorrow, she would get to the bottom of Leather and Lace, so to speak. Chapter 11. Maya had the strangest dream about the reading of Joe's will. The dream was surreal,
One of those through-the-shower-stall nocturnal visions, where you can't really remember what was said or where exactly you were, any of that. She only remembered one thing. Joe was there. He sat in an opulent burgundy leather chair, wearing the same tuxedo he'd worn the night they met. He looked handsome as hell, his eyes fixated on a fuzzy figure reading a document. Maya couldn't hear a word the figure was saying. It was like listening to Charlie Brown's teacher, but she knew somehow that the figure was reading the will. Maya didn't care. Her entire focus was on Joe. She called out to him, tried to get his attention, but Joe would not turn her way. Maya woke up to the sounds again, the screams, the rotors, the gunfire. She grabbed the pillow and wrapped it around her head, covering her ears, trying to muffle the terrible noise. She knew, of course, that it would do no good, that the sounds were coming from inside her head, and if anything, her efforts would keep them locked there. But she did it anyway. The sounds rarely lasted long. She just had to close her eyes. Another bizarre move, closing your eyes when you are trying to drown out sounds, and ride them out. When the episode subsided, Maya got out of bed and made her way to the bathroom. She looked in the mirror and then wisely decided to open the medicine chest, so at the very least she didn't have to look at her gaunt expression. The small brown pill containers were there. She debated taking one or two, but she would need to be sharp today, what with the reading of Joe's will and facing his entire family. She took a shower and chose a black Chanel pantsuit Joe had picked out for her. Joe had liked to shop for her. She'd tried it on for him, loving the feel and cut, but she'd pretended not to like it because the price was obscene. But she hadn't fooled Joe. The next day, he went back to the store and bought it. It had been lying on the bed just as it was now when she came home. She slipped on the suit and woke up Lily. Half an hour later, Maya dropped Lily off at Growin' Up. Miss Kitty wore a Disney princess costume Maya didn't recognize.
Do you want to dress as a princess too, Lily?